Some may find the following disturbing. Discretion is advised.
Never before in the history of sports podcasts have two men brought you opinion and analysis like these two. They speak for a city that's desperate for wins and titles, not whining and travesty. You might not agree with what they have to say, but you'll defend their right to say it. Sports fans across the world, from Chicago, Illinois, this is the Mac and Reed Show.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Mac and Reed Show right here on the Barroom Network. Fresh off of Ross and Mine's spring break, baby. We are live on YouTube. As usual, chime in the comments, all you barflies out there. Audio-only versions of the show are on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your content. Remember to like, subscribe, tell a friend or two. I'm at TheReal11Mac on social media. Ross is at Ross Reed. And good evening to you, sir. How's it going, Dad Man? You're wearing your Dad Man shirt. I'm wearing my girl Dad Man shirt. Oh, we coordinated our shit. You're so way cooler, I suppose. What's happening, man? How you feeling?
Good. How you doing?
Doing great. As I mentioned, we've been off for some time. Viso Joe, welcome back to the show. We got a lot to get into as we were off for a couple weeks. And not a lot in the ways of the NFL, but we will talk about, how we're in a holding pattern, waiting for what the Bears do with the number one overall pick and the legacy of the Bears quarterback position. What to look forward to there. Of course, the NBA playoffs are around the corner. Masters are underway. March Madness came and went, and we'll talk about the legacies of the champions and the losers there as well. Surprises along the way. But to begin, as I alluded to, Ross, we're just really waiting around now for this draft to start in a couple weeks. It will be here before you know it. And Bears obviously holding on to that number one overall pick after, last time we spoke, they were fresh off dealing Justin Fields and we were real high on the free agency period that they had. I mean, getting upgrading wide receiver at offensive line, getting some defensive pieces, really trending in the right direction. But, as we've seen throughout the league and with this organization, bottom five of the league, I feel like with quarterback development or quarterback legacy, you could put the Texans in there, you could put the Browns, other teams like that. And they've been bad. I'm sure Ross could mention some as well as we dive into the subject. But, I was drawn to a piece in ESPN which talked about it was a quote lackluster legacy for the Bears, talking about the Bears selecting a quarterback in the first round six times in this common draft era, and those quarterbacks have combined for zero selections to all pro teams. Go figure. Two Pro Bowls as Chicago QBs, Mitch Trubisky in 2018 and Jim McMahon in 85. Justin Fields was that most recent project, and his Bears career went 10 for 28, dealt to Pittsburgh for the sixth rounder, and he was an 11th overall pick that you went out for. You traded for Mitch Trubisky. You can go back to the Rex Grossman years. You can go back to Cade McNown, Jim Harbaugh, and Jim McMahon, the last Super Bowl winning quarterback for the Bears, the only Super Bowl winning quarterback for the Bears. It's bleak. And now, it's pretty much a sure thing. There's like the ever so slight chance that if Drake May was to wow them, that maybe they would gamble on him. But it seems like, a generational talent has come along. I feel like Caleb Williams has mentioned that same breath as a Wembanyama at this point, like he is just that guy who can turn a franchise around, hopefully. And the Bears have just had that stigma where they've not developed quarterbacks. They've had anemic offenses over the years here. But in this holding pattern, Ross, I mean, you got to be optimistic about where the Bears sit. And it's just, again, exciting to think that Caleb Williams will be coming to Chicago in a few weeks here.
So excited for it. You named five out of the six. I'm trying to think of the sixth one. Has to be Rex Grossman. Right. You named
I named Grossman in there. Yeah.
Yep. So it's Fields, Trubisky, Cade McNown, Rex Grossman.
Cade McNown, 12th overall pick.
Good yeah, that's by far the worst one.
Yeah.
Harbaugh, right?
Mitch at second overall is pretty bad, though. Of course,
yeah,
Mahomes, you know, you always have the Mahomes stigma, but
right. Yeah. And you know, hindsight is 20/20. I don't think a lot of people knew Pat Mahomes would do that. I actually think the pick would have been Deshaun Watson if they were to go against Mahomes, but that would have been a disaster. But yeah. Hey, listen, I mean, we're 2 weeks before the draft. It's like, hell yeah, yep. We should be excited. And I know a lot of people want to bring up the past and you know, the organizational failures from the past in terms of drafting quarterbacks. But, you know, these guys that are currently in place right now were not a part of that past. And we're talking about, you know, Ryan Poles, Matt Eberflus, Shane Waldron, Ian Cunningham, Kevin Warren, things of that nature. I think the Bears right now have built a great infrastructure for Caleb Williams to come in day one. Not only off the on the field, but off the field as well to succeed. You know, I think he's going. I think he is a special talent, and I think that he's going to step in and be easily the Bears' best quarterback in team history pretty quickly. But you look at what they did over the last couple of years. You add DJ Moore, you add Darnell Wright. You know, you know, even Braxton Jones is a solid left tackle. And then you go out in the offseason this year and, you know, you add to the running back position, you trade for a guy like Keenan Allen, which is awesome. You know, Gerald Everett, Cole Kmet are solid tight ends. The Bears have a good offense. They just need that one guy who's going to be able to facilitate it to everybody. And I think that, you know, I think, you know, Caleb is going to be able to do that. You know, he is the guy who, you know, you compared him, you know, he said he's, you know, a talent like Wembanyama. You know, I always hesitate to put the word generational on a guy because I don't think that you should throw that term around loosely, like the term GOAT and stuff like that. People do that a lot. But I do, when I watch him on the field and I watch his mannerisms and I watch the way he sets his feet and he throws the football, you even kind of see the way he is off the field as well. You can tell that he did idolize Aaron Rodgers, and you can see a lot of Aaron Rodgers to his game. Will he be the kind of quarterback Aaron Rodgers is? We certainly hope so as a Bears fan. Off the field, we hope he's a better person than Aaron Rodgers. But on the field, we will definitely take that kind of talent. But I think we're at the point right now with 2 weeks left in this process, we should be excited. And the last thing that we have to figure out as Bears fans is what jersey number is Caleb going to wear? Important question right now. We know that 13 is available, right? That's been given up now. Tyler Scott has given up that number, but we're assuming that could go to Keenan Allen. The interesting conspiracy theory with Dante Pettis giving up the number 18 number to go to 81. If you know about Caleb Williams in his high school days, number 18 was the jersey number that he wore in high school, right? Tight. We know there's some numbers for the Bears that are retired right now. He can't wear 2. He can't wear 3. So it's either going to be 13, 12 in honor of his guy that he idolized, Aaron Rodgers, or number 18. And that's going to be, to me at this point, the most pressing question as we lead into this draft. You know, it was announced today 13 players will be in attendance in Detroit 2 weeks from today. In the green room for the draft, Terrion Arnold, Jaden Daniels, Marvin Harrison Jr., J.C. Latham, Latu, Drake May. Boy, if he gets drafted by the Bears, I'm going to have to work on that name. Quinyon Mitchell, Malik Nabers, Roman Duzé, Darius Robinson, Brian Thomas Jr., Dallas Turner, and, of course, the aforementioned Caleb Williams. And you know, we can kind of pivot a little bit to, we know Caleb Williams is going to be in the house and he's going to be the Bears' number one pick, but will there be a guy in that group that will be drafted to the Bears at number 9 as well? I'm looking at guys like Roman Duzé and Dallas Turner and Latu. Those guys very well could be Bears. They could even trade up for a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. And I mean, I feel like obviously the sure thing that we've talked about is the quarterback at number 1, be it Caleb Williams or, you know, not Drake May at this point, but what they would do with that number 9 pick if they could trade up, if they, you know, could potentially get a Marvin Harrison, someone like that. But it looks like a Roman Duzé would be a safe pick there at 9 and add to the just the great core of receivers they have to build around. And so, you know, just alluding back to that, that piece I mentioned on ESPN, it's worth a read, where Courtney Cronin from ESPN was talking to a bunch of GMs and coaches, and you know, it's all different things as far as what they point to build success for a quarterback. A lot point to reps, a lot point to them not going too early. It's about doing your due diligence with these young men. So it is just a total package of things where this is, you know, a big, you know, we haven't mentioned Ryan Poles in this conversation yet, but this is make or break for him as the GM, you would think, as well. He's had great drafts so far, I think, on paper, and, you know, outside of the quarterback position, we're seeing where his vision has got him. Obviously, they have a lot of faith, this organization and Ryan Poles, in Matt Eberflus. We have not seen consistency at the OC, but we're going to see, you know, a new one now and take the reins and try to tutor Caleb Williams and try to, you know, get back to competing in the North and the NFC and the league overall, because I feel like a lot of this hype is just talking about the Bears now, even before the draft, and just assuming that Caleb Williams will be there. Talking about him in the same breath as like the Lions a couple years ago, you know, you're right there. You're going to be competing directly with some high powered offenses like Green Bay and the Lions. And everybody seems to be chasing the 49ers in the NFC and the Eagles. So you're going to get back to that. I like Ross talked about the numbers that Caleb Williams could potentially wear. 18 just feels like, you know, once Peyton rocked it, nobody rocks it anymore. So that would be kind of cool. Like, no one on the Bears, as far as quarterback is concerned, has rocked it since, you know, Kyle Orton.
I was going to say, the problem with these numbers is you start thinking about the past guys. The Bears have had so many quarterbacks. Start thinking about the past guys that were, right? So you're either going to get, like, the Kyle Orton vibes, which was, you know, he was by all means a successful quarterback for the Bears. Or number 12 gives you, like, Caleb Haney vibes, right? And that's that's kind of scary a little bit, too.
But a legendary number three. You think of all the great quarterbacks who weren't 12, but yeah, you get account vibes or Caleb Haney.
Absolutely. And RIP to all the people who pre-bought their 13 jerseys from DHgate in Korea and China and had and spent the 49 quality, 45 or whatever to get those bootleg jerseys, and he's going to come out with like number 18 or something like that. I don't think it's going to be 13 at all. It's going to be either 12 or 18. So RIP to those people that jumped the gun, so to speak.
You know, the vets got to get, you know, you hear about this too in the offseason when it's so slow like this too. What guys, they've got to pay $500,000 for a number for if you're a, you know, a rookie trying to get it from a vet in the case of, you know, Keenan Allen, who I couldn't imagine not wearing 13 at this point. But like you talked about, Ross, now we have nothing to do but just, you know, wait around in excitement, I feel like, and think about everything we mentioned. We didn't even mention just the bad overall picks. You think of like Gabe Kareemi. I saw it was like the last 20 years, the worst overall top 10 picks or something like that. But Kevin White, good God, how bad that was. You know, Mitch Trubisky trading up for that. I think, you know, again, talking about hindsight is 2020. It's just still so tough to stomach when you see what could have been with anybody else there, whether it be Watson or Mahomes. It's just been bad and just not franchise changing in that first round, I feel like, for quite some time for this Bears organization. They just need this breath of fresh air. And Justin Fields, you know, we can't forget what he did and how he was very exciting. But what Justin Fields lacks and lacked within the Bears uniform, you think that Caleb Williams will bring it in spades. So now it's just, again, focusing on those things once he is drafted, to make sure that he has all the tools to succeed. And I, you know, I don't think that it's, you know, the goal would be like a CJ Stroud, what you see out there. That's certainly the height of heights, but you know, you got to temper your expectations. You got to figure that he is going to have some trial by fire. And we're really fast forwarding here to him being in a Bears uniform and playing with the team. That it's going to be a tough thing, but it's going to be, you know, very, very exciting to see him hold that Bears jersey come draft day. And, you know, one of those other guys in the green room, perhaps a Roman Duzé or one of these other young, talented guys hold it as well next to your boy, Roger Goodell.
Absolutely. And the fact that they get to do it in a city where, you know, those guys are going to be tormenting Lions fans for a long time. I know a lot of Bears fans are going to travel up north to Detroit. It's if you're looking to get a hotel or an Airbnb right now in Detroit, I looked, it's next to impossible right
Good
now.
Luck. Yeah.
There are a lot of people traveling up there for this because this is a special moment in franchise history. You know, you're getting, you know, arguably the, you know, you're definitely getting the best, the most talented quarterback in franchise history drafted first overall. So it's very exciting times. Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, again, it goes back to the infrastructure being sound. We can go as far back as last year, which is not far back at all. But you look at what Bryce Young had to go through his first year in the NFL. It's just absolute disaster. Head coach didn't want him. Offensive coordinator was a nightmare. His best receiver was Adam Thielen, who's, you know, on one leg. Offensive line was a nightmare. I think Ryan Poles looked strong and hard at that situation and said, I can't put Caleb Williams in that situation. I think he also looked hard at Justin Fields and what Justin Fields had. And I think a lot of Justin Fields' negative traits that he picked up over the years was due to the fact that he walked into just a disaster of a situation. And so the Bears have already fixed that tremendously. I think they will still continue to fix that in this draft. I do think that I think right now, you know, I've hit three out of the last four first rounders for the Bears. Obviously, we know who's going first overall. I'm still struggling with that ninth overall pick because on one side of it, I think that it screams to me best available receiver on the board out of the three. Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Roman Duzé. Most likely be Roman Duzé. But I also look at that defense right now and I look at the lack of picks that they have in this draft. They don't have a second round pick right now. And I say in wide receiver is arguably the most talented position in this draft at the moment. And I say, boy, it's really enticing to trade down four or five spots with like a New Orleans Saints or something like that. Somebody that really needs their offensive tackle two on the board or something like that. And really look for a guy like Byron Murphy. I'm all in on Byron Murphy. You can get him right about 14 range and pick up a second round pick. And then you start looking at guys like Ladd McConkey, who's outstanding wide receiver out of Georgia. I forget the young man's name right now, but the other receiver for Washington last year that you, if you follow Caleb Williams on Twitter, consistently quote tweets him, shouts him out. You could tell this is Caleb's guy that he's kind of, hey, go get this guy a little bit. So I do think that right now, 50-50, we could see either Nduze at nine, or it's a very realistic possibility for a second year in a row, Ryan Poles trades back a little bit to accumulate more picks. Because as much as it is important for the Bears to have that offensive infrastructure around, you got to look at this defensive line right now, and it's still not where it needs to be at. You've got Montez Sweat. You've got some young guys that they drafted last year around that line. But you really want another young top, you know, blue chip elite talent on that defensive line to go after the quarterback and help get the football back to Caleb Williams. That's going to be equally as important.
And look no further. You know, we've talked about Roman Duzé and that being a pretty big home run for the Bears at nine overall. But, you know, given the offseason they've had, they got a pretty deep wide receiver room right now. I love the SEC, and I like a guy like Dallas Turner if he's there at nine and, you know, played at Alabama. He's a beast. He's a game wrecker. We'd look at what the young man's name in Houston had done last year, and just incredible how they turn out really great defensive line talent and at that school, albeit Nick Saban now out of there. But, yeah, I would go defense, I feel like, because I'm not, you know, Sweat is one thing, but the interior took a little bit of a step forward last year, you know, built through the draft, and then you just need that edge rusher opposite Sweat, and you're pretty set, you know, looking for game wreckers, looking for, again, within the division, guys to really disrupt the Jared Goffs of the league and you know, Jordan Love as well. So I'm all in for a defensive pick at that pick overall. I'm very curious to see, you know, what we didn't really foresee what Ryan Poles was going to do last year going into the draft with that, with his top pick and trading it for the great payoff he had. So you can only imagine what he could be doing potentially with that ninth overall pick. Be very interesting, that's for sure. But again, quiet throughout the league, kind of, as far as this draft is concerned and the off season. There's not much going on. We're all just waiting again for the draft in Detroit to see, you know, where I think, if anything, the big hype is obviously there could be five quarterbacks in the top 10 or four quarterbacks, something ridiculous like this. You know, J.J. McCarthy, him vaulting himself into the top 10 alone is really impressive. And for a guy who was in a very run heavy offense, I've seen the tape, and I saw his, you know, combine pro day workout and all that. And it's still insane just to think that he might get into the top five at this point. I don't know how you have felt about his ascendance into this talk, Ross.
Yeah, 100%. I think a lot of it is you get to this time of the year and there's such a long layoff between the college season to the combine, to the pro days, to the individual visits. I think a lot of teams start trying to talk themselves into guys that necessarily shouldn't be that high. We see it every year. I call it like the Christian Ponder, Jake Locker factor, you know, Blaine Gilbert's of the world. And I'm not trying to put that. Yeah, and I'm not trying to put that on J.J. McCarthy, but I mean, here's a guy that even, you know, 2 months ago, I mean, he barely threw, you know, what, 10, 12 passes in a game against Ohio State for the Big Ten championship. Yeah, he just wasn't considered to be an elite prospect at the quarterback position, but, you know, teams get needy at the most important position in sports, and they start grasping at straws a little bit. To me, this is the essence of the draft. This is the most important story of this draft. We know Caleb is going number one, but we still don't know what Washington is going to do at number two. Is it Jaden Daniels? Is it Drake May? I think it's Jaden Daniels right now, and I actually think Drake May could slide a little bit, but I also think that quarterbacks can go one through four this year in the draft. If I was a betting man right now, I would go Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels to Washington, Drake May to New England. And I think there is a for sale sign at that fourth overall pick right now for the Cardinals. I know a lot of people say that they should draft Marvin Harrison Jr., and they probably should, but you're going to get some enticing offers from Minnesota, I think, most importantly, because remember, they made a trade a couple weeks ago to move up a little bit and to get another first-round pick. I think they're going to try and move up and get a quarterback. I think Vegas is going to try and move up and get a quarterback. The Giants can try and get up and get a quarterback. I think it's very realistic that quarterbacks can go 1, 2, 3, 4 in this draft in 2 weeks from now. And I think that fourth guy is J.J. McCarthy. And then all of a sudden, that starts to elevate other guys. All of a sudden, Michael Penix Jr. has got to get drafted in the first round at some point. It elevates him. There's a high probability that we could see six quarterbacks drafted in the first round 2 weeks from now, which is just absurd. A guy like Bo Nix can sneak in the first round. That, to me, is just absurd.
Four in the top five. And when we weren't really talking about it that way, maybe four in the first round. Again, mm-hmm. The ascendance of J.J. McCarthy, potentially. It feels like every mock you've seen, the Vikings are really hot on him and what he brings to the table. If I'm the Bears, I'm like, you can have him. That's fine. We'll go get Caleb Williams. Sure. It will be curious to see, you know, obviously, it hasn't been the same for New England since Tom Brady left. As we know, they thought Mac Jones was going to be a nice, consistent quarterback, and he just hasn't turned out to be the guy, more like an A.J. McCarron, more so than a Tom Brady, I feel like, you know, talking about like an Alabama legacy. But Washington has just been in, you know, despite like Sam Howell putting up numbers last year, they've just been in quarterback hell, right? You know, you think back to Kirk Cousins and just the ascendance of him, and then they've just been just really down on their luck. You think back to RG3 days. It's again, going back to my discussion of teams that just have had bad luck at quarterback, you could put the Washington team, football team, over in that conversation as well. But yeah, I mean, there's a ton of talent. That the receivers, obviously, we know like Malik Nabers will be in this top 10 as well. So it's really a question of will Nabers go before and Odunze, and then if they're both off the board, then it seems really, you know, clear. And then Turner, I just saw a mock draft too. If he's gone, Bears might look at tackle. I look at the offensive line as a whole, because there's just, you know, you still have to fill the depth. It's an X man up sort of league. So if, you know, I don't know if there's a guy we haven't discussed so far, Ross, that might be on the Bears draft board that we haven't mentioned that would be taken at 9.
Yeah, I think we need to talk a little bit more about Talise Fuaga. He was the offensive tackle from Oregon State.
I just wanted you to say another, you know, Hawaiian name. That was what I was getting. There it is.
Yeah, listen, he's 6'6", he's 334 pounds. A lot of people have him as like, you know, maybe offensive tackle 2 or 3. I think he's offensive tackle 2 in this draft. Joe Alt is, you know, everybody's talking about Marvin Harrison Jr. being the unicorn in this draft. I think Joe Alt is right up there as the unicorn in this draft for me. I think there's no way he gets past number 7 with the Tennessee Titans, in my opinion. And they would be ridiculous to not get Will Levis more protection and, you know, and see what Levis can do with another year with protection and a running game and passing game and stuff like that. I just think they have to take Joe Alt, and that's if somebody else doesn't take him ahead of that. But then all of a sudden, you know, you start looking at who's left on the board for tackle, and Fuaga to me is that next guy up. I know a lot of people like J.C. Latham, who's the offensive tackle from Alabama. A lot of people like Fashanu, excuse me. These names, boy. From Penn State. To me, he struggled a little bit against elite talent. I was watching him a lot in the Big Ten last year. Fuaga to me is the guy if the Bears were to move up a little bit. But I think also that makes that number 9 a prime trade back spot, because there are teams out there that are in desperate, dire need of an offensive tackle, even more so than the Bears. I think about the New York Jets. You know, you got to protect Aaron Rodgers coming off that torn Achilles situation. They desperately need an offensive tackle. I mentioned the Saints. Ramchek, their offensive tackle, who got hurt last year, is not going to be ready to go this year. That is a major blow to them. So they're going to need an offensive tackle as well. I think Seattle's offensive line situation is a little bit shaky. They might move up. Steelers have a shaky offensive line situation as well. But I really look at the Saints and the Jets as prime trade back possibilities. And it's not even going back that far. If you're trading back with the Jets, that's one pick. They're drafting 10th overall. If you're trading back with the Saints, that's 4 picks. That's drafting 14th overall. If I can get a second round pick for trading back just a few spots, I think you have to look at that if you're the Bears, because you're able to then get the top level wide receiver that's left on the board, probably a guy like McConkey from Georgia at the top of the second round. And then you're able to take the best defensive lineman that's on the board as well. You know, maybe Dallas Turner is still there. If he's not drafted by like the Falcons, or maybe Latu is there as well. Latu, to me, is the best pure pass rusher in the draft. Of course, the biggest issue with him is he's had those neck injuries from when he transferred from Washington. Are the medicals going to hold up for him? But if the medicals hold up, that guy opposite Montez Sweat is just going to be a nightmare for quarterbacks for years to come.
I mean, as likely as it seems that it would be best pick available, whether it be Turner or Alt, one of these guys we mentioned, a wide receiver, that it's also very likely we know what Ryan Poles did last year and what he thinks about stockpiling some draft picks and some talent. If he could train out of that 9 spot, would not be surprising.
I also think, you know, my last thought about this is this should be the last time the Bears draft in the top 10 for a long time. Like, if you nail it on the quarterback position and you nail it right around the 9-10 area and you nail it to the rest of the draft, this team is in a position to compete. I fully expect for them 2025 to be drafting 20 or worse, and for that to consistently be that way for a while. So that puts a lot of pressure on Ryan Poles, though, to walk away from this draft. In my opinion, you got to get 2 elite blue chip players. One guy's your quarterback. You already got that. You're fine there. But you have to nail that second pick in the first round. He has to be an elite blue chip talent. And to be honest with you, I don't care what position it's at, because talent is talent. Like, if you think that it's at wide receiver and it's Roman Duse, or you think if it's at edge and it's Latu, or if it's interior defensive line or Byron Murphy, or if you think it's one of these offensive tackles, or hell, if you think Brock Bowers is your blue chip elite candidate, I don't care. You got to walk away from this, regardless of what position, with 2 elite players. I say this year after year, the Bears are not top heavy enough, in my opinion, in elite talent. Got a couple guys now. DJ Moore, Montez Sweat, Jalen Johnson. That's probably about it. I think Darnell Wright will get there after this season. But you need to go, in my opinion, seven, eight deep on the depth chart in terms of elite talent. I think that's how the Rams won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. And you need to mimic. You need to mimic that.
I agree. Yeah, Brujas 7 also pointed out that we want to be greedy with two top 10 blue chip picks and get out of the top 10, top 15 picking with the Bears picking there for the foreseeable future.
100%.
The pressure is on you, Ryan Poles, and a sign of how bored we are waiting for Caleb Williams to get here. On Twitter, there was debate about if Jalen Johnson had Justin Fields' blessing to wear number one, or if JJ was doing it to honor Justin Fields. Like, just bring me the draft. Let's go. Let's get me there. But we have things to talk about after this first half of the show. Talk about the hardwood, and shout out to the champions of the men's bracket as far as UConn topping Purdue. We had a couple Big Ten teams in the women's and men's national championship, but of course Iowa and Purdue both fell short. Caitlin Clark falling short to Dawn Staley's Gamecocks with South Carolina. South Carolina capping off that undefeated season is really impressive a year after they made their exit to Caitlin Clark in Iowa in the Final Four. And just tough break for Caitlin Clark going back-to-back national title games, but now she'll be number one overall pick. And, you know, it's crazy to see the effect that she's having on the WNBA too, and the Fever, and how they're going to be on, you know, what is it, like 30 nationally televised games, something ridiculous like that. But also shout out to Coach Hurley and UConn going back to back. I called it a little while back that UConn was a favorite for good reason, and how impressive it is. You know, you think about the blue chip talent, speaking of blue chip talent of the league, and how different it still is, you know, where guys have the transfer portal and they want to play in the G League now and they want to go overseas and make more money. That has changed quite a bit. It really does mean a lot to have a good coach and have seniors in place and upperclassmen to play along with the younger talent that you have. He's just built a hell of a program going up against the AP player of the year, and Zach Edey really neutralized him for the most part, and the rest of the Boilermakers offense and their players overall. It was a good, really good run for UConn. Exciting to see. I know Hurley is saying, like, I'm not going anywhere. I want to continue to stack these championships. And when you think about this team and this university where they were, you know, you think about Jim Calhoun and how great that he had them in a position to be successful. They had some down years, and Hurley with that, you know, that coaching tree, you know, of his brother and his father. It was really cool, really cool story, and good for UConn. But also, again, shout out to Dawn Staley, who's also putting herself at the talk of, you know, the best college coaches that we have ever seen in basketball, not just the women's college basketball league.
100%. I have a lot of admiration for Dawn Staley, for the job that she does there, for the class act that she is. She had amazing things to say about Caitlin Clark after that game. Yep. And how Caitlin put that entire league on her back as such a young woman. But, you know, you hit it on the head. I think the hardest job in sports right now is to be a college coach in the one and done era and the NIL era. So you're just constantly competing against uphill battles, and still Hurley and Staley have put together two amazing programs. And that's what it was. You watch both those games. It was, one was just an elite, you know, one side was elite team and with elite team play and in depth, and the other side was just one player. Right. And that's kind of where it was at. And that's no, you know, not to what Purdue and Iowa did this year, but it's a lot of credit to Hurley and Dawn Staley. They were absolutely outstanding. And I have no doubts that both programs will be back, you know, in the Final Four next year. You know, that's how good they were. Dawn Staley lost four starters last year, and she was able to go undefeated. That's how good that program is there. Same thing with Hurley. He's just been awesome. I know a lot of people think he's a hard ass and a red nose and a lot of stuff like this, but you know, you can't tell me that kids don't like playing for him, and you know, he steps into a living room and recruits a kid and they're all in, and the players certainly love it, and it's good for the sport too. You know, it brings you back to the old school personalities of the younger Coach K days and the Bobby Knight days, and you know, things of that nature. So even you talked about Jim Calhoun, who's, you know, an asshole as well, and you know, you look at it in contrast to Calipari, who's just a mess at Kentucky, just really didn't get it done. You know, he had one great year from Anthony Davis and he got him a title, and he's been coasting off of that. And all of a sudden now he just jumps to Arkansas because they're able to to squander up a bunch of money from boosters, and he's just going to sit there and collect paychecks. He's never going to win anything in Arkansas, in my opinion. So, and even now, you can't get anybody to take that Kentucky job. So many people have turned it down. You know, now Scott Drew is the latest guy today to say he's not leaving Baylor for Kentucky. He's not leaving Baylor for Kentucky. That's a tough spot for Kentucky right now. So, you know, it's, you know, college sports as a whole, even on the football side, is in a very weird spot. But that just makes me tip my hat off more to these elite coaches like Staley and Hurley, who are able to rise above it and still put together amazing programs and put these and stack these championships.
No question. Is a lot of those players from the men's and women's teams that we talked about are moving on to the NBA and WNBA draft. WNBA draft is like tomorrow. You know, it's just there's no fucking layover. Yeah. And then the season starts in yeah. May. I feel like.
Sky draft third overall. Bring me Angel Reese, please.
Yeah, like Angel Reese or who's the young lady from Kentucky, South Carolina, who was playing out of her mind. Who, you know, we'll see.
Cardosa.
Thank you. Yeah. Cardosa. But speaking, you know, sticking with the hardwood here, we got to talk about the NBA, and we've been really, you know, just waiting for the playoffs to get here. I think it's, you know, typically the same teams in the past couple of years that we've been talking about at the top, as far as, you know, Celtics and Bucks really jockeying for top of the East. And then the West, you know, the Nuggets are really impressive and not looking like they have missed a step from last year. But don't sleep on Minnesota and Oklahoma City. I like what they're doing. The Clippers are kind of peaking at the right time as well. And in the East, you know, I really do love what the Knicks are doing. I'm very jealous that, you know, they got a guy like Jalen Brunson in an organization that makes trades and you know, changes the roster a bit in midseason to try and be more competitive. And now, you know, they're clinching a third seed in the East. And the lowly Bulls are going to be in the play-in game, Ross. Are you going to buy tickets? Are we going?
No. No, not going. But I will be in the Phoenix Scottsdale area next weekend. If there is a Phoenix home game, I would not mind seeing Kevin Durant and Devin Booker in person. I'll do that one.
It'd be a fun one there, sitting at you know, the 7 seed overall, and then the Pelicans at 6 with a healthy Zion Williamson. And don't look now, the Mavericks are also peaking at the right time with Luka and company. You know, it's crazy to see also in the play-in game, and this just sets up for one of these ridiculous NBA narratives that we know is coming, that the Lakers and Warriors would be in that play-in game. Yeah. And then one of those teams is going on a tear, I feel like, whether it be LeBron and the Lakers or Steph and the Warriors. You know, I feel like, with LeBron getting out the league here very soon, I mean, who knows? He'll be playing until he's 45 like Brady. But potentially, you know, the narrative of him going from like a nine seed to going and playing in another finals would just be ludicrous and just what the NBA would want. But that aside, it's also, you know, crazy. The Heat, you know, also are going to be kind of poised for a run, I feel like. And Sixers could also make a run, getting Embiid healthy at the right time for the playoffs. But, you know, I've talked a lot, Ross. I got to say, too, just my pin on things is the Celtics are just out of their mind. And to have a 62 or whatever they end up with their record, just to have a ridiculous winning season like they have, and not come up with a championship would just be a terrible travesty. But what are you thinking with the playoffs here? Who are your favorites?
I think we're on a collision course to a Celtics versus Nuggets championship, because both those teams are the two best teams, in my opinion, in the NBA. They're the two deepest teams in the NBA. I think one side has the best player in the NBA, Jokic, and the guy that can take over a game the most when the playoffs start. And he's the guy that is the most patient on the floor, doesn't panic, gets the best shot for his team in every single possession. And you just can't overvalue a weapon like that when it comes to the playoffs. And the Celtics, you know, as long as they stayed healthy, and they've gotten a complete season out of Porzingis, knock on wood. The way they move the basketball, the way they move threes, they've got the best three-point differential in the league. They've got the best point differential in the league. They've got the most games this year of teams beating teams 20 plus points. So they've just been an absolute juggernaut this year. And I think the East is pretty down right now. You know, you talk about Embiid coming back from injury. You know, he's going to be a little bit rusty. He even buckled his knee the other night. Doesn't look healthy. Giannis, you know, had a calf issue yesterday, and now he's out for the rest of the regular season, and we're going to see how it affects him in the playoffs. And you know, you've talked about the Knicks. The Knicks have had a good year, but now Julius Randle's out for the season. I don't think anybody in the East has the firepower to compete with the Celtics. I think the Celtics are going to go on one of those runs where, you know, you might lose like one or two games before you get to the NBA Finals. West is a little bit more competitive, but any team that has Jokic and Murray on it, I can't bet against those guys. I just can't bet against those guys. As much as I love the Lucas of the world and Steph going on a heater and, you know, what LeBron and AD can do, you just can't beat Jokic right now in a seven-game series. I think he is the ultimate cheat code. He's going to win his third MVP in a couple weeks. It's well-deserved. I can't stand the discourse for it, but he's on a trajectory right now to where if he keeps this up, he wins another championship, you got to start putting him in the top 10 best players of all time. You have to.
And I'm forgetting the conversation, whoever it was, just talking about Jokic and where he stacks up as far as big men. It was just the stupidest conversation. You know what I'm talking about?
I've seen so many stupid conversations about Jokic, and could be honest with you.
Like, he won back-to-back MVPs. He just won a championship, and you're just taking away from his legacy.
It is. And what it is because he's not a very vocal guy. He wins his games, and he goes home. And he's
this also, is 9-to-5.
Right.
It's just a fucking job for him.
Man. He's also European. There's just a European bias that Americans have, and I think it's ridiculous because if he came from Cleveland, obviously they wouldn't be treating him like this. But it's because he comes from Serbia, and it's because he's quiet that they treat him like this. But this guy is one of the best offensive players I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen – he's like 7-foot tall Magic Johnson out there. It's unreal what he does. And so I think, you know, he's going to show people this year, and he doesn't even do it maliciously. He just does it because he has a love for the game and a love for his teammates. He's going to show people this year, again, third MVP. I think he's going to win another championship. If he goes back-to-back in third MVP, I think everybody got to shut the fuck up. Like, if you're talking trash about this guy, because it puts him just in elite territory of big men that we've never seen since, you know, the Olajuwon days and of that nature, you know?
Really impressive. His all-around game is just bananas for a guy who looks like, you know, he would be dominating at the Y, just, you know, the way he's physically built. But just his court vision, obviously rebounding at 7 feet, and the shots he's making, it's like Anthony Edwards just said that motherfucker is unstoppable, basically. That's like your direct competition, too, with the Timberwolves being up and coming. They're just not slowing down. And I think, you know, in this, when we get into the playoffs like this, it's so important to have that vet presence. And, you know, with these young guns and the Knicks and the Timberwolves and the Thunder, you know, they're going to run up against these battle tested teams like the Nuggets and the Celtics trying to get over that hump. I wouldn't be mad about that 1-1 matchup at this point right now, if you put the Nuggets and Celtics into the finals, as it were. But I just feel like something screwy. We're going to see come that play-in game, you know, if LeBron goes on a tear, we might be in for some deep run for him. But you would think that this is just, again, building into that narrative that it's really phasing those guys out, the Chris Pauls of the world and LeBron and Steph Curry. And now we're seeing, you know, SGA, and we're seeing Jokic in his prime, and we're seeing Jason Tatum trying to get that first ring. So I would love to see, you know, it's not quite Celtics Lakers, but shit, just give me like Celtics Nuggets and like build around this core and give me some, you know, back-to-back finals with them. That would be very good, good basketball, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's time. The changing of the guard has to happen. You know, too many of these primetime games, these Saturday night games, are on the backs of LeBron and Steph Curry. And I love both those guys. Those guys are on the back nine of their career. You've got to transition this league to the younger, talented superstars. Jokic, Doncic, you talked about Anthony Edwards, you talked about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Devin Booker and Jalen Brunson and Jason Tatum and so on and so forth. Paolo Banchero, we didn't talk about Orlando and how awesome they've been this year, sneaking up into a top five seed. You know, Banchero's been awesome this year. He's going to be on the U.S. Olympic team this year in Paris. And so it's time to start profiling these young guys, and let's hopefully start seeing some of these young superstars perform on the big stage.
We shall see. Let's go to some quick hits as we wrap up the show, Ross. And biggest news of the day, I mistakenly on Ross's Instagram, he posted the great Jay-Z song, The Story of OJ, on Spotify. And I was confused at first because I'm a dad and working. And I was like, was his music not streaming as far as Jay-Z? Is this a title thing? And then I just go to Instagram. And every post was OJ dead at 76. OJ dead. You know, it, and it's, you know, it's another celebrity death. Obviously, it's complicated. It's not that complicated in that he died getting away with murder. And in a lot of people's opinions, I certainly sided with it. And it's another reminder to watch the great documentary Made in America about OJ. And
the best trial. Sports documentary of all time.
It's up. Yeah. It's
of all time. Of all time.
Yeah. It's incredible. Yes. And you put that, you know, obviously with The Last Dance, and we've had some great ones over this past decade and change or whatever. But like Cliff said, I can't say rest in peace to OJ. That's so well said. No, we just say he died. And you look what he did on a football field. You look at what he did as a USC Trojan. Look what he did with the Bills. Look at in the league. And how he it was one of those guys in the 70s and 80s who really capitalized on endorsements and all this and just seemed to be that really lovable guy and going to do TV and movies. And it's complicated too, obviously post that trial, how his life has been. And, you know, you look at, again, the robberies he was involved in or, you know, counterfeiting random things like this that he did time for and how he just became sort of like a radio personality, a media personality over the last several years. It was a pretty private battle with cancer. He looked fine, but he's lied to us before. And so, you know, here we are. He's dead. Your thoughts, Ross?
You know, my thoughts is I think Michael Jordan and O.J. Simpson are the two biggest pop culture athletes of my lifetime. I wasn't around, obviously, to see Muhammad Ali do his thing in his prime. So I don't think there are two bigger names in sports than those two guys. I think one, obviously, Jordan for all the positive things. But for OJ, it was all the negative, morbid things. But listen, I was in high school when the murders happened. So I remember vividly that whole situation. I remember him flying to Chicago the day after the murders and him having to fly back to LA. I remember the chase. I remember the trial. I remember the acquittal. I remember watching courtroom TV at the height of that situation. I even remember as a kid watching the Isotoner commercials and him being on CBS and things like that. That, you know, he was in Naked Gun movies. He was just... OJ was a big deal. I don't think that, you know, we're not going to be able to eloquently elaborate to our children how much of a big deal this guy was for decades for like seven different things. You know, it was insane. He sparked a lot of, unfortunately, culture wars, right? And a lot of things of that nature. This was coming off the heels of the Rodney King situation in LA and the LA riots. And you know, a lot of people forget about that situation. So that's how I'm going to remember him most as. That's why I love the documentary so much, is because it, to me, is so much of a time capsule of 50 years of information and stuff like that. And then I think secondary, but still important, the guy was just a hell of a football player. This guy was one of two players ever to win a Heisman Trophy and an MVP. You know what I'm saying? Like, what he did on the gridiron was just absolutely amazing. The guy is one of the 10 best running backs of all time. That's, you know, who just happened to be a murderer. You know, he happened to kill some people. And I think that's just the very conflicted situation here. But I think it's okay to express your opinions about it. I think it's okay to see him as a negative person, but still realize that this guy was an accomplished person in many ways. And I'm just going to remember him for just being just massive pop culture. When the trial was over and he was acquitted, I don't think there was a bigger person on the planet for positive and negative reasons at that moment. Right. I mean, this guy, we've seen Dave Chappelle jokes and specials about it. Norm Macdonald has had great bits about this. I mean, he was just a massive, massive figure. I don't even know how you equate it today. I don't know, you know, it would be like, you know, I don't want to put any names out there and associate them with a negative thing, but he was just bigger than life.
Yeah. Third time I met OJ.
And of course, I mean, you can talk about this for days. We don't have a Kardashian empire without OJ Simpson.
Yeah. Very true. You know? Even mentioned that. Yeah, we really don't.
There's just a lot from the OJ tree.
There's a lot from the OJ tree, and you just really can't draw another comparison in the sports world that just, you know, again, was in pop culture and just the part of that movement that you talked about. You put it well, just him and Jordan being very paralleled in their marketability and likability seemingly. And, you know, and MJ now, you know, gets backlash as being an asshole or whatever, but, you know, it's nothing compared to what OJ did in the acquittal in his life after, and how we, you know, of course, the U.S. just obsessed about it for good reason. Just a really fascinating story, the highs and lows, the literal story of OJ. Very wild. But yeah, we can't say rest in peace to OJ. On to the Masters, Ross. Do you have a favorite? It's a sign that spring has certainly sprung and summer's around the corner. Bryson DeChambeau is top the leaderboard at the end of Thursday here, as we're going to have a few exciting days of golf. Scottie Scheffler, both some favorites. We'll see if Jon Rahm can get it together, or Brooks Koepka, one of these hot shots, or, you know, a new upstart. We shall see. You got someone that we've missed? Come on, Ross.
Yeah, I was going to say, Scheffler, obviously, to me, is the favorite in going into the weekend, although a hell of a round today from DeChambeau. I'd like to see Rory make another run here. I think it's about time that Rory gets back into this. I think Rory kind of elevating himself back into that level would be awesome. Also, favorite golfer of soon-to-be Bears quarterback Caleb Williams. He's a huge Rory McIlroy fan. So I think it'll be fun. I think he's hovering right now about ninth overall, but he's definitely in the pack. I'd like to see Rory get into the mix this weekend on Sunday and make a good run at this.
I mean, it's all – and every year it seems that Tiger's still there, and it's going to be tough for him to even make the cut. That first round was pretty rough for him, but you never know what Tiger's got left in the tank at this point. It's nice to see some of these vets kind of make a run towards getting that green jacket, man. And it was cool to see, you know, Jack Nicklaus still teeing off today to start off the Masters. And it's insane that these guys who have won like six times, it's a hell of a course. It's a beautiful thing. It would be a bucket list thing. It would be a quite an event to go to, not just for the cheap concessions, but just what a one-of-a-kind course that is. The show. I don't really have too much else. Oh, wait, Ross. Who you got in this Kendrick and J. Cole beef, man? This is all after the Like That song came from Future and Metro Boomin's pretty good album. I liked it. Yep. Obviously, that just blew out any other sort of analysis of the album. We were like, wait a minute, Kendrick. Mm-hmm. Where are you coming from with this? And then that caused J. Cole, to the uninformed folks out there, to come back at Kendrick and then ultimately apologize. But one of his quotes was, four albums in 12 years, I can divide on 7-minute drill. Man, and this is...
Took that bar from Jay-Z.
What's that?
Took that bar from Jay-Z from Takeover when he was going after Nas.
Sure. I mean, this came after this too. We're talking about the best diss tracks, and this wasn't a diss track directly in my eyes, and I don't think it was in yours either, Ross. But it caused a lot of discourse. Not only like this back and forth, he had this quote unquote diss track as far as J. Cole in response to Kendrick's verse, which was a phenomenal verse, and Kendrick in my eyes won that. But then to go to the Dreamville Fest and basically say, I apologize, Kendrick's my guy, it's all love. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, don't don't step back like that to me. But Kendrick is just so subtle like that. And it's crazy. Again, this is like, this goes back to this conversation. I feel like I've seen many of the same interviews with players, like NBA players or just athletes. And they're always like, one got to go. Is it Kendrick, J. Cole, or Drake? And they're always like, Kendrick got to go. And for what reason, I don't know, because he seems to be the most talented, certainly rapper of this group and artist. Like, it is just the disrespect continues. But that was a hell of a verse. I don't know. Interesting back and forth with him and J. Cole.
That's why they call him the boogeyman. That's why they call him the candy man. He's the guy that your favorite rapper fears the most. And, you know, he doesn't pop out often. He tends to disappear in his hole for a while. But when he pops out, boy, he puts fear in everybody. He had J. Cole shook after 2 or 3 days. And I actually get what J. Cole was saying. I mean, listen, J. Cole, hey, listen, when you start getting 40 years old and you're a family man, and you got festivals and corporate deals and this and that, do you really want to get yourself locked up in hip-hop beef for the next 6 to 9 months? It's not good on your heart. It's not good for your soul. It's not good for business. It's not good for that stuff. And I don't think J. Cole is that petty to really want to muck it up in hip-hop beef. And so he bowed out early, and I think that was the smart thing for him. It's not in his soul to do that. I think one guy is ready for this. I think the King Petty in Drake will respond, and I think he will respond.
All his subtle quickly. Instagram posts, yes.
Yeah, I think that's one guy that is like, listen, I'm here for the smoke. And so I think J. Cole is like, let me bow out the way. Let me get out these two guys' way and let them do business. And I think we will see a summer of a Drake versus Kendrick slugfest, and it's gonna be interesting because Drake's the kind of guy where him and Kendrick are two very different rappers. Kendrick, long style, right? Takes a while to get a verse out, takes a while to get a song out, takes a while to get an album out. He takes his time with things, and Drake is like, boom, song here, boom, verse here, boom, I just dropped the 3-pack, boom, I just dropped the 4-pack here. Like it's gonna be interesting to see how both these guys respond. There's rumors we might get a Drake song as early as tonight before it tries to step on the release of the second Future versus Metro Boomin album that comes out tomorrow.
I also love these artists. You know, Ye just did it with what's his face, Ty Dolla Sign. You know, these three-parters or two-part albums. Like, I'm all for that, and then I'm all for more music from those guys we mentioned, obviously, at the top of the top three for good reason. And J. Cole, we've been due for a new album for some time. And Kendrick, we know that this isn't going to lead to an album necessarily, but he could get in the studio, he could do something with Baby Keem, could be fun. And Drake just continues to just be the most consistent of them, just putting out music. And anything he puts out is going to be on the top of the charts. So something to monitor as we go forward here. But we got to sign off. Thanks to everybody for watching, listening in. Thanks to all the barflies. Shout out to Cliff and company and chiming in. Remember to follow us on social media. Follow me at The Real Evan Mac. Follow Ross at Ross Reed. If you missed any of the previous episodes, the audio-only versions are on Spotify, iTunes, on YouTube as well, on the Barroom Network channel. Remember to follow the network at Barroom Network, of course, for all the offseason Bears coverage as we get ready for the draft. It's going to be here before you know it, and Chicago sports and beyond. But for now, we say deuces. Everybody be good to each other out there. So long.
Peace.